This is the Oil and Gas Startups Podcast, where we showcase emerging technology and the stories of industry founders, investors, and leaders with your hosts, Jake Corley and Colin McClelland.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Oil and Gas Startups Podcast. But we don't have a startup today. We've got something even better. We've got Kate Stevenson with Novus Consulting. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We've gotten to know each other, I think, as of pretty recently. I've known some of your people over the years. And so it's been awesome to get to know you, get to know the team. But for those that are listening who are not familiar with Novus, what is it that you guys do?
Sure. So we are data management and technology consultants for the energy sector. So we do a number of things, from strategies around what tech you should purchase or implement, to data strategies and architectures. We do implementations of tech within energy. And we also do integrations, data management, implementations, help clean up data, a lot of that. And a lot of work recently has been around M&A. So we've been doing a lot of data conversions and standups around the M&A activity of the market.
So it's so funny. We were just talking about this before we started recording. I came into the industry in the data management space. That was like, you know, I'm not an engineer. I'm not a landman. I'm not anything else. Came in from the technology side, played very heavily in the data management space. And I think in a lot of ways, a lot of things have changed, but a lot of things remain the same. And one thing that remains the same is that I still think this is single-handedly the biggest issue that the industry faces. And there's a lot of like really cool things that I want to dive into that we can do, but without like a solid foundation of like good data, it's absolutely impossible. And so that's why it's like super important what you guys are doing. So before we get there, what is your background? I don't know anything about your story.
Oh, sure. So I started my career off at Accenture in Houston and loved consulting.
Were you from Houston originally?
No, I'm from Oklahoma City.
Okay.
So I went to school in San Antonio, Texas. So went to Trinity University and then started working for Accenture for about 5 years, maybe 4.5 years.
Did you have a tech degree or?
No, business.
Business.
Okay. Yeah. But they were recruiting people with psychology degrees and so forth. They just wanted problem solvers.
Yeah.
And so we, and it was Anderson Consulting when I first, when I got hired, and then they broke off and became Accenture and I went the Accenture route. And just got into utilities.
Yeah.
And I worked on ERCOT.
Okay.
So yeah, don't blame me for everything going on. But yeah, no, stayed there for about 4.5 years. Loved consulting, but I hated the hours. So it was 80-hour work weeks every week, lots of travel. So I decided to move back home and worked for Chesapeake. And stayed there for about a year. And then
what'd you do at Chesapeake?
I was in IT. I was a project manager, and I worked with one of my partners now, Kevin Decker, and I worked on their custom field solution. So we built an app, a field data capture app for Chesapeake that they're still using today.
I know a lot about that.
Yeah, it's fun. And that's how I learned the industry, because I came from utilities working at Accenture and then moved over into Chesapeake. And that's how going out to the field, seeing the field offices, visiting with people, doing ride-alongs, and just fell in love with it.
You just got oil in your blood and you just couldn't
get it out. Well, I'm third generation oil and gas. So
really?
Yeah, my grandfather was a pumper.
Okay.
And then my dad is an oil and gas attorney.
Okay.
And so, and now I'm following in their footsteps.
You just couldn't escape it.
I couldn't escape it. I love it. I love it.
So how long were you at Chesapeake?
I was there about a year, got recruited over to Sandridge.
Okay.
And then just love consulting so much. So I've just been in and out of consulting since then.
Did you do the same thing at Sandridge as you did at Chesapeake?
I did, just IT.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were there for a couple years?
A little bit less than that. I loved it, but I realized how much I missed consulting, because I really thrived at Accenture. And so I left Sandridge and started working for Elizabeth Gerbel at EAG. And I stayed there for about 4 or 5 years too.
It's a name I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah.
I sat down with Elizabeth in 2014 at my first startup, and we showed her exactly what we were working on. You know, we were competing against Quorum and P2 and IHS and Inertia and like all these different groups. And so, yeah, I was really appreciative that she had us in at that time. Man, that seems like a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But I know they're still growing.
And they are. Doing great things. They're doing great. And she was a great mentor of mine.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had started having kids and it got harder and harder to get to Houston. So I went independent, started working at Devon Energy and stayed there for about 3 years independent. And then went back into consulting at Stonebridge. Again, I just can't get away from it. I was there for about 7 years and led their advisory practice. So kind of grew kind of what we're doing now at Novus, just that advisory piece.
So is it less hours than the Accenture, more of these boutique things?
It is. When you're in boutique consulting, you have a little bit more control over what you do. And it's specialized, right? So you really kind of dig into what you're good at. Now, also, you know, when I moved back to Oklahoma City the first time, you know, right after I left Accenture, they didn't have an Accenture office up in Oklahoma City. So I really didn't have a choice. I kind of had to leave because at the time there was no remote work like there is now. So it was in the dark ages.
So you spent a good amount of time really focused on data management and specifically in oil and gas. Why? Like, what's your why?
Well, what I liked, what I like about consulting is solving problems and doing it for multiple accounts. So I don't, I like moving around a lot. I like change. I like seeing new challenges and trying to figure out how to solve those challenges. And every time I go to a new client or I learn something new, whereas when I was kind of staying at those at Chesapeake or Sandridge, I was just kind of in one little area and I wasn't able to branch out and really learn and solve all of these problems.
You might be similar to me. Like after my first startup things, long story short, ended up leaving. My partner and I had a falling out. And so I'm at this kind of crossroads where it's like, do I stay in the industry? You know, I was like burned really, really hard. Do I continue to work in this industry or do I go find something entirely new to do, right? And ultimately I came back in. And just kind of kept trudging forward with the exact same vision of what I was trying to do to begin. And the reason being is that every time I would talk to like a new company, it was just like the problems were just growing and growing and growing and things weren't being solved. And I was like, well, somebody's got to be able to like tackle this. You know, and so, so dedicated more years of my life to being able to solve like this data management issue, which like we said, is still an issue. And it's only getting worse as we're adding more and more systems and capturing more and more data. And it's like, we have more data than we even know what to do with.
Well, and everyone wants to do all these amazing things with AI and machine learning, and they want to build these beautiful reports, but ultimately they fail because the data is so bad. And there's not that foundation. And another problem in the industry is the amount of M&A transactions, right? So you could have one piece of data start, you know, one company. It goes through five different transactions, ends up in the final resting place, looks completely different than it did before, just because every time it moves company, you lose a little bit of it. You lose a little bit of the validity of it. So
the way that it used to be done, at least 10 years ago, and I'm not sure if it's changed or not, was a lot of the times what we saw was whenever there was a transaction, the due diligence on not just the data, but really the asset was to pick a small portion of it because we didn't, they didn't have the time and the capability to be able to do true due diligence on every single asset. You take a small sample size, you run it, you're like, yeah, this looks good. Or you take a couple sample sizes until the numbers make sense and you're like, yeah, this is good. Not really knowing what the rest of the assets should truly look like. Is that still the same?
Well, it is for, you know, the thing about M&A is that everyone's under a time crunch, right? You got to get off the TSA, you got to get those high critical assets into your system. So yeah, if they're in a time crunch, they might just look at a sample size and say, it looks good and move in. A lot of times people just throw it in and don't even look at it, to be honest. So that's one of the things that we do is with our kind of our data conversion is we have rules, pre-built rules, and we can run queries off the entire data set so that when it's coming in, we throw it through that data pipe and then we send it to the source systems and or destination systems, and we're able to get those uploaded with at least, you know, good data that pass our rules. So
what kind of things are surprising to you, if any, in the space
of the M&A space?
Which is just in the current state of just like data management.
Well, I think, like you said, I think what's surprising is when I started in the industry 15 years ago, we're having the same conversations that we had 15 years ago, right? And I think a lot of people felt that, hey, if I implement these big, sexy ERP systems, it'll solve all my problems. Well, what we're finding is because they haven't focused on the field, they haven't focused on operational data, production data, and they thought that if they just fixed accounting, everything else would fall into place. That's not the case. You fixed accounting data and it looks great, but what the heart of the business is the field. The heart of the business is the information coming from the field. And we have to get that right. And we have to work on getting that right.
Why is it taking us so long to get that right? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, I want to get to the bottom of this. Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Why is it such a challenge for us to be able to get a handle on data management? Because you've talked, like, you've got all these different data models. Mm-hmm. I know PPDM tried to push one for a while. You had decent adoption, but it wasn't industry-wide adoption. You've had some other standards kind of pop out. Mm-hmm. Technology has changed. We moved from relational databases to things like MongoDB. Mm-hmm. Like, technology is evolving,
right?
And we have so much more tools. Barriers are so much lower than it used to be before. Why can't we get there to this promised land of 100% just clean data?
Yeah. And I don't think it'll ever be clean, right? It's never going to be perfect, but at least we could get it to 96% or 95% and be good.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think the M&A piece is one where people just keep buying stuff and they don't give the back office, or they don't put a playbook or a plan in place to integrate that data to match the rest of company standards. The other thing is there are no company standards. Mm-hmm. So when you think of master data, what is a well? What is a facility? If you create those rules and then every time data comes into your environment, it follows those rules, then it just over time gets better, especially in an M&A. But third, I just don't think people gave the field and operations enough credit. Mm. I think they felt, oh, we'll just clean it up when it gets into the accounting system, or we'll just clean it up when we get it into the warehouse. We're not gonna make the field do any more than they need to. And they just got ignored. But then when you go out to the field and you talk to a lease operator, like, they're excited about technology and they want technology because now they have a phone and they've learned to use their phone and they have all these apps on their phone and they want that same capability in their day-to-day. So it's getting better.
Do you think there's intentionality with thinking about the end goal of what they actually want to see and then being able to reverse engineer that into cleaning up the data and figuring out which data you actually capture, right? Because there's a lot of just like unused. Or do you think it's, we struggle to get everything in, and then once we get it in, it's like, let's just see what we can do with this, yeah. I guess?
Well, so we have a philosophy of good in the field, great when it gets in the corporate environment, and the very best data when you're doing revenue, right? And if we can get a good data set from the field, get it into the system, use technology to apply data standards and MDM capabilities, and some of the newer tech, like maybe AI, machine learning, to get data really good before it goes into what needs to be very best, then that's really where we're trying to shift everybody to look.
Do you think we're breaking down departmental silos more than we used to? Because I feel like that's a huge issue from one, from an organizational standpoint of actually running the company, misaligned incentives to where drilling and completions are not on the same page. They're not on the same page with production. Production's not on the same page with the entire finance department, right? Has that changed or is that changing? I think the same thing kind of applies from a data standpoint of being able to have everybody understand that all of this kind of flows together and ties together to the success of the company.
It's changing. It's getting better. When you talk about data standards, everyone knows that they need to have it, that they need to create what we call a well life cycle, right?
Yeah.
Let's track from inception of when a well is created, when it's a prospect, all the way from when it's divested. And in that process, you have to meet with the other departments, define what those processes are, where data originates, how it's created, how it's used within the organization. That exercise has been phenomenal in breaking those barriers. Mm-hmm. And then if you all sit down and agree on, this is our standards, these are our standards, then all of a sudden everyone starts moving in that direction. But it's getting that agreement and that alignment that's often tough and difficult.
Yeah.
But we're seeing more and more projects, or more and more people request those projects from us, and us talking to them about those projects because they know that it's critical in order for them to be able to go do the things that are really neat around reporting and AI.
So back to something you said a second ago. So what is a well?
What is a well? So I always define a well as from prospect. So when it's defined as a prospect, and that's when you need to start capturing data. And then we use well status across, across each phase of the life cycle. So, you know, when it's kind of being proposed to when it's starting to stake location to drilling to completing to producing and then to divesting. So it's really important to understand at a high level what those phases of the well are and then define all the processes that feed it.
So is it a well bore or is it a zone?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, it is a, well, we do well bore is really how we've been defining it. Yeah.
There's, I've just seen some like messed up accounting to where it's a single well bore, multiple zones,
yeah.
different working interest partners in different zones.
Yeah.
It can get so hairy.
It can. So and especially because systems are different, right? Yeah. And sorry, I'm having to go back to a long time ago when I did that. But yeah, it just depends on how you want to define it within your organization.
Yeah. What are there any, if you want to say, are there any like particular softwares that you guys are really, really fond of that you guys are partnered up with?
We partner with a lot of software. We try to stay agnostic and try to pick what's best. But we have really great partnerships with Peloton, with Quorum, really spent a lot of time working with them. We're engaging with Pack Energy. So really looking at their products and what they're doing there. They're doing some really great things at Pack. And then of course we've started discussions with W Energy again. So we're really trying to focus in on the major players in the market. There's vendors really realize that, hey, we need partners to go out and do this because if they really want to grow their licensing, they don't have the arms and the legs to go implement everything themselves. Yeah. So partnering with us has been great for them and great for us. So
talk to me about, you guys see so many things, you're in so many different companies, you're in the weeds, you're in the trenches. What is everybody talking about right now? Like, what are some of the trends that you're seeing? Obviously AI, we can dive into that. Let's talk everything outside of AI first, and then we can spend an hour talking about AI.
Yeah. Actually, we're seeing a pretty interesting trend around the field. So more and more people want to manage the work and go to, I mean, we've been talking about operate by exception for how many years now, right?
Forever.
And no one's been able to actually get there. But Chesapeake had a very interesting tool called WellTender. And it's something we've actually hired a lot of people that worked on that tool. Because we're based out of Oklahoma City, so everyone worked at Chesapeake at some point. But we've really focused in on the field and operations. And one of the things that our clients are asking us for is how can we initiate work automatically to go automatically send tickets and work orders out to lease operators to where they're not going to a single route every day anymore. They're just working what needs to be worked for that day based on the data that's coming in from SCADA, or maybe there's a preventative maintenance ticket that needs to be done. Maybe there's a spill that's occurring. So how do we reorganize the work automatically through technology instead of it being done by a human? So how do we dispatch that work? And that's been something that's been extremely interesting to work on given our experience at Novus and what we've done there.
Is that a homegrown solution for Chesapeake or is this Resonance WellTender?
It was homegrown. I mean, it was homegrown.
Okay.
So they own it. They've built it. I think there's a lot of vendors out there trying to do it because that's where we see a lot of the demand.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of tools that are starting to move that way.
Yeah.
W Energy now. Scout with Pack Energy. We're seeing, you know, Maximo is another tool that will do something like that. So there's a lot of applications out there where they're trying to build that and solve that problem.
So anything else outside of the field stuff?
A lot of, again, M&A work. A lot of trending with we're gonna all of a sudden consume this company. So how are we going to get the data in? How are we going to get the data in right? The other thing that we talked about earlier, again, is the data cleansing. Mm-hmm. The look people have on their faces when you say you need to clean data is just amazing. They do not want to do it. No one wants to do it. No one wants, that's something that is boring, and they'll come up with the standards, but the thought of having to go in and cleanse data in the source systems and then get it into the warehouse is something they just don't want to do. So we've had a lot of projects of where we're helping people cleanse their data to get prepped for more fun projects.
I can't tell you how much manual cleansing of data I had to do.
Yeah.
Just.
Oh, it's so boring.
Years of my life just looking at rows and rows and rows in the database.
Yep.
Manually. Yeah. We didn't have AI back then.
No. And we're coming up with, you know, because we see a lot of those projects, we're trying to make it easier for our data engineers. So we're working on tools, and we have IP inside our house to help with that so that we can work faster and more efficient as well for our clients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about the AI stuff. Yeah. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? What are people talking about?
I just don't think people know what to do with it yet. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of ideas.
Yep.
You know, and we've talked about some ideas too. I think there are ways that we can use AI to solve those problems like data cleansing that people don't want to do. I think we can use AI to help people with internal portals and be able to ask questions and get answers back on internal data.
Yep.
But the problem is that it's only going to get partway there if we don't figure out what their data architectures are going to look like. Mm-hmm. And things are changing so fast with technology. Everyone's kind of getting into SaaS environments, single platforms, right? Versus having everything on-prem and these big, huge warehouses. So even data architectures are changing. The way we bring data in is changing. People are having to rebuild all of the interfaces because they're moving into the SaaS platforms of their vendors. So there's a lot of things changing on data architectures. Mm-hmm. And then there's this AI thing that looks really cool and beautiful and fantastic, and everyone wants it. But the question is how do I marry all of that together?
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a lot of conversations with a lot of different technology teams at a lot of these EMPs, oilfield service companies, particularly over the last 6 months. AI is top of mind for everybody. Well, I don't say everybody. There are certain companies where I go in and I'm like, hey, if you know, you guys been playing with ChatGPT, and they're like, what is that? And I'm like, what? How do you not? And I'm talking young people.
Really?
Young engineers, like fresh out of college that are landing at some of these EMPs that are like not paying attention to what is happening in the AI space. And then you have some of these older leaders that are just resistant to change, resistant to new innovations, skeptical. They're not playing with it. If you're not, this is talking to you guys. If you guys are not playing with AI at least a little bit, you are going to get so left behind.
Agreed.
You're going to have somebody who understands this and knows how to work with this. It's not rocket science. It's much easier to work with than you would possibly imagine. You don't have to be an engineer, but you will get left behind so quickly if you do not learn how to use these tools.
And they really are efficient. I mean, just looking at, you know, how AI is going to change the way we work, how AI is going to take those low-level things that we don't want to do anymore, I think it's going to completely change. This is a point in time in our industry where we can look back and say, okay, this is when the landscape of data is going to change.
Yep.
Because of all these new innovations that are coming into the market. Because I can tell you that the technology space, everyone is laser focused in on it, and they're developing really quickly tools and AI and machine learning and all these things that are going to be going into their applications, and it's going to be amazing.
What I'm seeing that's really encouraging is that talking to some of these teams who really get it and understand what's coming and understand what the opportunity is companies saying, hey, we have like 25 terabytes of this data that is sitting here and we've never known. It's so overwhelming that we don't know what to do with it, but we know that there's massive insights that we can unlock. We want to deploy AI on this one particular use case to kind of figure out what do we do with this?
Yeah.
You know, and so it's really, really cool to see where we're going. The industry will get leaner. That's just the nature of that's not just this industry. That's every single industry. You're gonna have people that are supercharged engineers that are able to do 1,000 times what an engineer used to be able to do in a fraction of the time.
Exactly.
You know,
it's going to be phenomenal. But I think we're going to need the large companies or the super majors to lead the way, because the mid-market, the smalls and the mids, they're just not going to invest in it. They're going to wait until the Diamondbacks or the Chevrons or the Devon Energies are going out and doing it first. And then that's where the innovation is going to happen. And then it'll trickle down into the other areas where people may be more resistant. So we need to lean on kind of the larges and the super majors to really invest and develop it, because it'll change how we do business.
So in my experience, maybe it's different for you. Mm-hmm. I would say that the independents that I've talked to are leagues ahead of the super majors.
Really?
Yes. In terms of actionable things that are actually happening, like actual projects where the rubber meets the road, versus staffing up a massive team of people that are doing sandbox projects that'll never actually make it into production in the business units.
Yeah.
That's what I'm seeing. Yeah. I can be totally wrong, but that's literally just limited to my experience and who I've kind of seen.
Because they're more agile, right? So they're probably able to pick things up quickly. The question is how much are they willing to invest in it? You know, while their arms and legs are busy off drilling wells and producing wells. So that's something that we've always struggled with. But then again, we're also on the consulting side. So, you know, those small independents, they don't necessarily always want to hire consultants. They kind of want to wait until the innovation happens up here, and then they'll just grab it when it gets developed.
Yeah. The cool thing about that is that there's a huge opportunity for you guys with them once they come around to realizing that they're oil and gas companies and they should just pump oil and gas and stop staffing up massive IT departments.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, you know, you asked about trends. That is something that's a trend. We're seeing, you know, after COVID, even a little bit before COVID, IT departments are shrinking.
Yeah.
They're shrinking and they're becoming more infrastructure focused. We're seeing, well, the smaller guys, the mid-market, we're seeing, hey, we're just going to either outsource all of IT, and then the business is responsible for their own applications and their own data. And so there's pros and cons of that without having a centralized group that licensing data, everything goes into. But it is a trend that we're seeing is less IT in the business side of the house.
Yeah. One of the things about AI that a lot of people don't realize is that it's quite difficult to apply an LLM to just a kind of generic data set when it requires contextualization for the industry.
Yeah.
Right. There's this entire context layer that is typically missing, which we're working on that.
Yeah.
And another thing that kind of ties to that is, and the way you can kind of capture this is just domain expertise internally.
Uh-huh.
You think about, like, we have all of these old guys getting out that have years and years of this tribal knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we don't capture this, we're going to forget how to drill vertical wells.
Exactly.
Right? I was at an office of a pretty large company recently. I asked them, I was like, if you guys have a question, like if you have an engineering problem and you're looking to like solve this, you don't have an answer for it, where do you go? And he's like, we walk down the hall and hopefully ask somebody that has the answer. They had literally, I mean, 5,000 employees. They literally have no single repository for like company-based knowledge.
Wow.
And that is pretty much across the entire industry. The super majors do have their own things. I know SLB has something, Halliburton has something. But I would say for a large percentage of the independents, there's absolutely nothing. We are missing out on one of the biggest opportunities to take what our people know and being able to capture that for the people that come behind them and then use that to contextualize the data that we have for AI.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree. It is something that is a huge miss in our industry, that knowledge share, right? Yeah. And, you know, but the question is how do we get that data out of their heads, out of their systems, and into a right format to where we can serve that up, right?
We'll see.
We'll get there.
We'll see.
We'll make it happen.
TBD. We've got some pretty cool initiatives behind the scenes with Collab Pro. But what else? Is there anything else outside of AI that's exciting to you?
All of it's exciting. We've just spent about 80% of our business right now is just M&A work.
Yeah.
Really just trying to get people
It's keeping you busy considering it's M&A season.
It is. I mean, what, $190 billion last year, of which $144 billion last quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's It's big. There's a lot going on. And really with cleaning up data, trying to get it into the systems, working in the field, we are stepping into midstream quite a bit,
really,
which has been a lot of fun. So we implemented Maximo for one of a big gas plant out in Wyoming. And then what we did is we standardized it and put it in all of their gas plants. So now all of their gas plants are operating the same way, same processes, procedures, getting all the data in place. And then we moved into pipeline. And that's been really fun. And so we're trying to get and move into that direction as well. But it all goes back to trying to clean up operational data, regardless of what sector we're in. It's operational data that needs the most help.
Is midstream better or worse off than upstream?
I would actually say the where we were and what we were doing was a little bit worse than I've seen it in some of the companies, but it just depends. And I think a lot of it was because they... those gas plants just were bought and sold so many times. Yeah. They didn't have that focus of someone to say, what systems are you running and what should you be running? And then, so when they got bought by our client and the leader there was just had this vision of, I want to consolidate and put everything into one system, same processes, and I want to be able to have a shared services across all of our plants. So he created in his department a shared services group. And now he's able to save money because he's moving like an I&E tech from this gas plant over to that gas plant to go work what needs to be done versus trying to versus contracting it out because they're all on the same system, same processes, and they're all connected. Yeah. So it was pretty fun to watch. It was one of my favorite projects.
Do y'all hear much chatter internally when you're working with clients around Bitcoin mining?
No, no. I've been, it's interesting to me.
It comes from the engineering teams typically.
Yeah. It's interesting to me. We are keeping a pulse on it, but it hasn't stepped into our world just yet.
It's IT's kind of rarely involved in that. Yeah. So a lot of times it's just simple gas purchasing agreement. So it's really engineering teams and then finance gets involved and that's pretty much it.
But it's very interesting. And it's getting a lot of buzz.
Oh, it's getting a lot of buzz.
A lot of buzz. And so we're keeping a pulse on it and we're trying to see how we can help in that area as it gets even bigger.
It's one of the best tools, or it's the best tool, in my opinion, to be able to monetize stranded or wasted energy, whether it's oil and gas, whether it's renewables,
exactly.
Whether it's a substation that's running at 20% efficiency. It's amazing.
It really is.
We pitched for our Empower event in a few weeks. So obviously we're heavily invested in
this space. I'm sure. it's exciting. And honestly, I've learned a lot from watching you guys and learning what you guys are doing around this space.
You got to spread the gospel.
It's a lot of fun to watch.
It's been really cool to be kind of in the ground floor of the Bitcoin mining space kind of accidentally. Whenever we did our first Empower, it was supposed to be a backyard barbecue. It wasn't supposed to be like this big event. And then it ballooned into what it became. We had 1,200 people. We had all these energy companies. We had all these Bitcoin miners. And
wow.
It was just wild. And now we're
going
to do
it. So you kind of stepped into something
we're like accidentally kind of at like the center of like this little ecosystem.
That's
and it's
really
growing
cool.
And obviously like Bitcoin is absolutely ripping right now. And you've got the Bitcoin ETFs, you've got the halving coming up. So price appreciation from that. You've got more regulations in oil and gas. So you can't flare anymore. You can, but you can get penalized for it. So you need a solution for it. All of these crazy things, more demand response programs here in ERCON and PJM, some of the other grids as well. And so load balancing, demand response kind of benefits there. Yeah, it's wild.
It's very complex too.
Very complex.
I mean, it's just like one thing, it's a domino, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just so many things have to go into it make it work.
The deeper you get into it, just like oil and gas, deeper you get into it, the more you realize you don't know anything.
Right.
And it's much harder to understand than you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
Kate, this has been awesome.
Yes, thanks for having me on. It was fun.
Absolutely. We'll do it again sometime.
Yes, absolutely.